Hello and welcome to the Trip On podcast, in which we combine architecture, entertainment and urban life. My name is Lee.
And my name is Alex, and we're an architect and themed entertainment professionals who travel a lot, and we're also interested in urban development and attractions.
And if you want a visual impression of what we discuss in this episode, check our Instagram at Trip On podcast. And this time, a Trip On episode in the series Entertainment. We have visited Motion Gate Dubai. We actually visited Motion Gate Dubai as the second theme park in one day. The first part of the day was IMG World of Adventure, and it's now time for us to talk about the trail of that experience. So it might be interesting to hear from you, Alex. How did you experience IMG now you have been able to process it a bit?
After being in the second park, it's also easier to compare. We've liked the visit, we've stayed there longer than we've planned. We've done some interesting rides. However, the park felt way overscaled to us and a bit too empty.
There is a general lack of atmosphere in IMG, I had the feeling. It was a bit dark, a bit somber. In general, it felt very stale. They have some IPs that are world famous, but it didn't really leave me that I would like to go back there. But it's still very fascinating to see and experience. Very quickly, Alex, why are we in Dubai?
We are in Dubai because it's holiday season during the winter time, and we wanted to spend this time together, explore the city a little bit more. And our trip is fully packed. We have every day some different attractions planned, so there will be a lot to discover.
Dubai is very well known for its 2003 announced Dubai Land project. A fun fact is also that when I was in Dubai in 2015, I did actually drive to the Dubai Land site because I wanted to see what was there. And I saw the Universal Studios gate. It was standing there and there was nothing else around it. So it was so weird to see. And Universal was already back then canceled. So there was a lot of promotion about it. There were a lot of posters and banners, and it didn't happen in the end. So when you do start to look into Dubai Land and what it was supposed to be, you really fall into a rabbit hole. I looked into it, and the very, very early plans that were presented were for it to have an artificial canyon with artificial rock work, red rock formations based on what you can find in the US. And there would be a Sweetwater River flowing through it from one side to another. So you can imagine in the desert. There would have been a sports city with an F1 track and an Olympic city. And there would be a game city.
The project was supposed to be twice the size of Walt Disney World. And what was meant was just to create the largest collection of theme parks in the world in one place.
Dubai was expanding extremely fast, and there were a lot of people investing in it. There was a need for more developments and for more real estate. Dubai Land was presented in 2003. In 2006, the real estate boom really kicked off and you got like a massive peak in real estate. And then the market lost from 2008-2009 more than half of its value, which meant that, of course, there was a massive economic crisis. And more than half of the real estate projects that were all already kicked off were canceled. So you can imagine how heavy this hit was for Dubai. This meant that the whole Dubai Land project turned immediately silent. There was no update about it. And then around 2010, a new plan was formed by the Dubai Council. And slowly it was presented what is the new idea behind it. And it seemed like they were stepping away from the idea of this massive plot of land with all these different entertainment venues combined. It seemed like it was much more focused around independent investment projects that were each a bit isolated and no longer so much connected by the Dubai Land infrastructure. New plans appeared for IMG Worlds of Adventure, Miracle Gardens and Global Village. And all of these are still located where the original plot was for Dubai Land. The project led by Sheikh Al Maktoum himself, though, was now in a completely different form. It was now called Dubai Parks and Resort, and it was much more slimmed down. Yet again, they presented a massive plan of what should finally entail a lot of theme parks, all clustered and resorts combined into one big plot. They actually chose this time to first build and focus on a portion of the theme parks, resulting in only Dubai Parks and Resort to be built first. Also, they chose for a different plot of land, much further to the west of the city, And this plot of land is bordering Jebel Ali, which was back then a brand new district of Dubai.
Jebel Ali is the area in Dubai, which consists of a planned island, a palm Jebel Ali, and also an airport, Al Maktoum Airport. And both projects are currently a bit on hold.
Jebel Ali was always supposed to be the next big expansion area of Dubai. The Al Maktoum International Airport was supposed to become the biggest airport in the world. There we go again. It was reported to be able to handle 260 million passengers annually, which is insane. It is actually built. That's the crazy thing about it. So it does exist. But it's not operating as the main airport of Dubai currently. That is still the International Airport Dubai. And obviously, they were also planning to at some point connect the Dubai Expo 2020 to it. And Alex, this may be interesting because you have been to the Dubai Expo site. I haven't seen it yet.
Right. This is actually the last metro station, so you can realize how far in the city it is located. The area after Expo is serving as an entertainment area. It's being used for different events. There is a beautiful dome which has amazing projections on it. So depending on the time of the year, they organize Christmas events, Ramadan events. And I have to say, they try to utilize it still. So the area is not empty because of no more Expo.
Yeah, also a bit of context to how Dubai is mainly run, also from a city perspective. The Middle East functions a little bit different from what we are used to in the West. In the case of Dubai, the Sheikh is both the Royal Highness as well as the political power. So you can kind of say that he's the ruler of the Emirate. Besides that, he's also the owner of most of the big real estate investment companies. So he really has total power over the development of Dubai. So we have to give a bit of context also to the Dubai Parks and Resorts area, because it's quite a big area with multiple different projects in one, and we have to place it into context for you to understand it. Currently, it is owned and operated by DXB Entertainment. From what I understood is that the government and the Sheikh is less involved in it. So maybe you can tell a bit, Alex, about what you can find in this Dubai Parks and Resorts area.
Yes, so Dubai Parks and Resort comprise of four main theme parks. There you can find the Bollywood Park, Legoland Dubai, Legoland Water Park, which both are meant mostly for children in the age group 4 to 12 years. And there is also the Motion Gate theme park, which we would like to focus on today. All of that is connected by Riverland, which in a way reminds me of Disney Springs.
Besides the parks, there's also a bunch of hotels. There is the Legoland Hotel, which is right next to the Legoland Park. There is the Lapita Resort, which is in the Polynesian style. I think it's very much influenced by Disney. And the Lapita Resort is the most luxurious resort, which is right across the Motion Gate Park. And there is also Rove at the Park, which is a cheaper hotel. And all the way on the side of the project, which is something that we didn't see now, but there is also an outlet village, which is possible also to be visited from outside. To give this layout a bit of context, is that the Riverland area used to be or was originally meant to be publicly accessible. So this was supposed to serve as the shopping and dining area with its own gate. And basically it was like a combination of gates around it. And then all the parks had their own gates that were ticketed. So when we went, it was a bit different, but we will get to that later. Interesting to say, by the way, is that it's not only these parks that were supposed to be here. It was also at some point supposed to contain a 20th Century Fox park, which never really happened. I think also one main instigator is that, of course, they wanted to see the success instead of building everything in one go. A bit of a sad thing is that the Bollywood Park recently closed. This park has been struggling from the beginning, and the visitor numbers were so low that at some point Dubai Parks and Resort decided to close it, and they are now forming new plans for that park in particular. But to be honest, we were never really interested to go there. No. I think if it would have been there, maybe we would have tried it just at some point. But I think the Motion Gate Park is the most interesting one for a wider audience.
Yes. So to give you a bit of insights about the Motion Gate Dubai, it's a Hollywood-inspired theme park, and it's showing themed areas and attractions based on DreamWorks animation, but also Columbia Pictures, Lionsgate, and the Smurfs. And it was opened in December 16th, 2016, and the initial owner was the Dubai Holding. It was the company owned by the Sheikh.
So let's now talk about the head, the heart, and the base. The head, which is the first impression of the experience. The heart is when we actually experienced it for a couple of hours in a row and we have a better image of what the experience really is like. And then the base is what we can also call the trail, is what you kind of take from the experience when you're already outside of it. The trail in this case, we will probably go more into that on the next episode. But for now, the head. I actually already had a first impression of this resort because I was familiar with it even outside of the Dubailand context, mostly because I know quite some people and companies that worked for Dubai Parks and Resort. There's a bunch of ride suppliers, of course, from the West, theme and construction, designers. Most of this stuff was coming from either the US or Europe. And unfortunately, there was kind of a bad reputation to Dubai Parks and Resorts because there was a bit of a legal matter there. And I don't really understand the full details of it, but I do know that it had such a negative connotation because some companies totally went bankrupt. They lost everything because of the Dubai investments. A lot of freelancers that were supposed to spend quite a lot of time in Dubai to be working on the resort, they had to leave Dubai earlier because they were just not able to pay their rent. And this is not really a good look, especially when you consider that this investment is so big and it seems like Dubai is not short on money. That's also one of the reasons why I was a bit skeptical towards this project. And I did see very clearly when we experienced it that it is very Western, the way that it's built and set up and designed, and very, very Western. All right, so we took the taxi from IMG towards Dubai Parks and Resorts, and it took us again into the desert. We saw along the way that there was again a lot of supposed to be built real estate, but it didn't really happen again. So it felt a bit similar to IMG. And then the Dubai Parks and Resorts area is all of a sudden full of palm trees and water and all that stuff. So it makes it such a contrast when you have just sand and then all of a sudden this green oasis with resorts and with swimming pools and all that stuff.
Yeah, with perfectly cut grass.
Perfectly cut grass, really nice signing. And yeah, it's a really weird experience, especially because it's so far from the city again. It doesn't really lend itself for people to just make a quick tour to Dubai Parks and Resorts. So I think that's also the reason why it maybe isn't as successful. But there is a reason why they chose this location. Do you know why?
I think they were just hoping for bigger expansion. So there is just a lot of empty land that could be used. But I'm not sure if they're still going for the expansion. So it feels a bit deserted.
That's one. But the other thing is, it is in between Dubai and Abu Dhabi. I think they hoped to also catch the Abu Dhabi area for their visitors.
Which is a bit unusual because Abu Dhabi has their own parks and I'm not sure if people are willing to drive that far if they have so many other parks already in their city.
But that's the fun thing, right? That's kind of the invisible battle between Dubai and Abu Dhabi. When this was presented, it was supposed to be the biggest entertainment venue in the world. And I think Abu Dhabi at the same time was developing their biggest entertainment venues in the world. The Gate of Riverland, which was of course the gate into, let's say, the Riverland hub, was now serving as the gate where they already checked the tickets. So I think they changed the approach, the operational approach to it. This is maybe good to mention is that the ticket counter is now in a container.
Just in front of the
just
project.
In front of the gate. So that already felt a bit weird because it doesn't feel like it really belongs to how the whole thing is set up.
We were there already at the end of the day. So it wasn't that full at the entrance. Even we've been reminded what time the park is being closed. So I think for the personnel, it seemed that we're already coming quite late.
Strangely enough, the ticket had Legoland on it. All the tickets have Legoland on it. So I think they kind of cluster now everything into one ticket. Then we saw the big gate saying Riverland and we were both a bit confused, like, that's not Motion Gate, so we probably shouldn't go here. I think one guy heard us say that and he said, no, it's here. Motion Gate is here and then to the right. So it's a bit confusing all in all. I had the feeling that it was set up a bit like Universal City Walk, where you have first the area where there is a lot of F&B, maybe some live entertainment, music, a body of water, actually a lot of different restaurants where you could stay and hang around after the park's already closed. And then the Motion Gate Park itself was much more tucked away around the corner. We didn't immediately see it.
Well, I see that they were very highly inspired by the American parks. We could see the Motion Gate Gate, and this completely looked American. And it reminded a bit Disneyland Studios, I would say, gate, or in general, the style.
The Walt Disney Studios in Paris.
Yeah, exactly. We could see that this project will be much more than we maybe initially thought. So the gate for the Motion Gate is extremely impressive. It's huge. It is having this Americana or US theme park style.
The square in front of Motion Gate is massive. It's absolutely massive. I don't see any scenario where it needs to have such a big square. It is insane. It is probably even more grand than the both Disney parks in Paris. And it seems a bit much, although I do have to say that from a thematic point of view, the square in front and the gate itself is very much film studio. It's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
There is a massive film camera set up on the tripod. The actual entrance itself is shaped like a film roll. The floor is designed as a film roll leading up to the entrance. This park is very clear about it. This is a Hollywood film studio themed theme park. It brought me immediately back to Hollywood, or even to the Orlando parks. So the first impression of the park actually continued a little bit, because when we made our way through the gates and we walked through Studio Central, which is kind of the central area of the park. By the way, this park is very clear hub and spoke system, opposite to what we experienced earlier, where the kind of the hub and spoke system is combined with a loop, with a circle, which you can kind of call a cartwheel system. So you have the central axle, and then you have the wheel around it. In this park, there's no way. You have to go always to the hub to go to the other zones. But then we walked onto the central hub, and then you see literally the gates of the different lands around you. So in front, you have the DreamWorks Hall. On the right side, you have Smurfs Village. Immediately on your right, you have Columbia Pictures. And then on the left, you have Lionsgate. And to be honest, this layout is so structured and so clear that I have to say the anticipation was also rising. And we were standing there like, oof, do we have enough time to see everything?
I think this was the moment when we actually started to panic a bit, that maybe we should have spent there more time than just half a day.
Yes.
At least I started to panic.
So let's go to the heart of the experience. In the middle, all the way in the back, there is a massive blue box.
So the blue box is the DreamWorks Hall.
Yeah.
And this was actually the place that we decided to go to first, because it was super impressive from its look and how grand it was. It has the clouds painted on the facade.
Yeah.
So in the style of DreamWorks.
It's very abstract how they did it, but it's very effective.
You immediately associate it with DreamWorks.
Consider this park to be comparable to another park. So you have the main street and you have the main hub. And then it's really comparable to the Disneyland castle parks. And DreamWorks is basically in the place where the Disneyland castle would be.
So it's just in front of you, right at the front of the entrance.
Yeah.
So it leads you there. It's first thing you want to actually explore or go to. And the hall was a huge surprise to us, I have to say. So once we've entered, there was a centerpiece, like a huge sculpture inside. It had the DreamWorks characters in the form of fountain. It had brass color. And it was quite big, so it was definitely a photo op area as well, because this was the first thing that we've done. We stopped there and we started to take lots of pictures.
It's what you say, you mentioned photo op. I think this park is full of photo ops.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they always lay it out in front of you so that you're really willing to take a selfie or a photo together. And DreamWorks Hall is no different.
And it also creates anticipation, because you can see all those characters in the fountain and you know what you can expect in the hall. Because the hall from the outside is quite bare, only with the clouds. But then this fountain, I think, reveals what kind of IPs will be inside.
And then you walk into the Shrek area, and this area is really, really well themed.
We were so amazed.
Maybe it's because we were in IMG earlier, but the experience to walk in a park like this into a hall that is so incredibly well done, it was a massive surprise to us. And to walk into the Shrek zone with the soundtrack, the typical Shrek intro soundtrack, that's very, very effective.
The light, the music, everything was creating such amazing atmosphere. And you really felt like you're in Shrek Village. So they've managed to make that immersion to the full extent. We've decided to go for Shrek's Merry Fairy Tale Journey, the dark ride.
And it's just so much fun to see Donkey and his dragon, and to see Shrek and Fiona and the kids. And it's very, very recognizable, especially because we grew up with Shrek.
Yeah, and also the style was quite unique because I haven't seen a dark ride done in such a way. So this was a nice surprise.
Yeah, great opener. Really, it set the mood immediately. And from Shrek, we continued to How to Train Your Dragon. And I might say that I really love this film series, especially the first film. And we went on the Dragon Gliders, which is the main ride over here. And how was it for you, Alex?
It already started amazing with the queue line because we've spent there quite some time. But the queue line was so beautifully themed that we didn't mind standing there and just looking at little animatronics that were already putting us in the mood.
I immediately recognized this ride because it's a mock system, and it's exactly the same as the Arthur ride in Europa Park. Very similar layout, only this one is entirely indoor, not going outdoor. Kind of like a coaster, a powered coaster system with a lot of freedom of movement and with integrated audio. And I think it's a great ride system. You see the familiar characters and you make, for a short part of the track, you make your way through the zone. And the moment when you actually sit on the ride and you come into the How to Train Your Dragon zone, you see it from the top as if you're flying over it. That's very, very effective. It's really, really well done.
And from there, we've moved to Madagascar zone and to Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, the Madagascar area is themed to the Madagascar circus, which is not, I think, the nicest choice for the Madagascar series because this is very much kind of shouty, colorful, blinking lights circus.
Mm-hmm. I think it was more relating to the time when they lived in the city and when they were running away from the zoo than actually when they lived in the wild.
Yeah, and the coaster over here, the Madagascar Mad Pursuit roller coaster, was unfortunately closed.
Yes.
They warned us about it at the entrance. It still hurt.
Mm-hmm. The same was in Kung Fu Panda area. Unfortunately, the Unstoppable Awesomeness ride was also closed. However, we had, I think, some noodles there in the F&B point. Yeah. So the Kung Fu Panda area had figures.
It was also like a photo op.
Yeah, but it was such an interesting style. They looked like a paper made figures.
Yeah, they looked like
figures.
Those Chinese lanterns.
Yeah, with the light from the inside. So it definitely was making a nice impression.
And even though the Unstoppable Awesomeness ride was closed, we took our time to walk around and to take in all the details, because this is something that you can say about the entire DreamWorks area. There are so many gags and little details and fun references to the film. And it was really nice to see all those details. And we took our time there. And that's actually everything in the DreamWorks area. So I was already quite fulfilled because this is the main reason why we came.
I would say that the DreamWorks area is pretty big because it takes easily one third of the park. So we've seen already quite a lot. And once we were outside, the sun was already going down. So we could experience the outer area with the night lights. It looked also impressive to see how it was lit.
Yeah, we walked into the Lionsgate area, and to be honest, Lionsgate, it wouldn't be my first choice for a movie-based IP theme park, mainly because there's not so many very strong IPs, although they did have a couple of IPs here that were quite well known. The latest additions to this zone were the John Wick coaster with a small themed area and the Now You See Me coaster. And John Wick, I do understand, but now you see me, I don't know if it's that popular as an IP still.
Maybe not as popular, however, the film was quite, yeah, quite a big thing.
We walked immediately into what looked like a very, very impressive Vegas-themed passage, like a street.
Mm, and because it was already dark, the lights were just making it extra amazing.
Yeah, I have to say this area was very impressive, especially because this was built for Now You See Me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of effort that they put in. Initially, I thought it was a functioning street in a theme park, but later we realized it's just a set. There's nothing behind the facades.
Mm-hmm.
So the roof over it, it consists out of LEDs. So it's like an LED show that you have there. All the way in the end, there is the New York area. Then we saw a building that is very recognizable, the Continental Hotel.
And this was the John Wick, right? It's nice because we've just recently seen last movie from John Wick. So
yeah, we watched, I think we watched all of them quite recently.
Yeah, so it was quite fresh. So we've recognized it immediately.
There is the story that the Continental Hotel in many different cities is actually a meeting place for assassins and for criminals and for mafia and stuff like that. And John Wick is one of the most famous assassins in the world. The ride is called John Wick Open Contract. Honestly, I didn't really read up on it, so we didn't know what we were walking into. Maybe that's also something good to mention. We didn't really know what to expect from anything here. And it turned out that all the way in the end of the queue line, it was a roller coaster from SNS Rides.
Which was 4D free spin. And to me, it was a new ride. I've never done this one before. I don't know if you've ever tried it.
I don't think so, no.
What was interesting about that ride was actually that it moves in one plane, in a way.
Yeah. You can say that it's a 2D track layout, so yeah, it's only going vertical.
But the car rotates in itself.
And then you have an area which is entirely devoted to the Hunger Games. Honestly, I don't think it's that popular anymore, also because this area was entirely empty all the time when we were there. But in here, there is the Hunger Games Capital Bullet Train, which is a mock launch coaster. And this is a launch coaster with a multipass launch, which means that you go through the launch multiple times, backwards and forwards. And I have to say, really good ride.
Very smooth,
yeah. It wasn't, for me, necessarily very much Hunger Games. I didn't really see the connection that much.
No.
But it's a really good coaster. Another ride in the Hunger Games area is Pan Am Aerial Tour, and this is a immersive tunnel ride. And this was not so good. Even though it was quite a high quality production with all the real actors, and they made it seem as if it was a really exciting adventure that we were going on, but it was quite forgettable, I would say. So from the Lionsgate zone, we basically crossed the park to the other side to go into the Columbia Pictures area. This area is the most landscaped. And on our right, there was a big dark ride, Ghostbusters Battle for New York. And of course, you don't skip a dark ride in a theme park, so we went on it.
It was also a shooter.
It was a shooter, yeah. This ride was a bit of a letdown, I would say. It was very chaotic. It didn't really have a clear storyline. And also the shooting aspect of it, at some point we lost kind of our interest in it.
Yeah, and from there on, we were continuing to the Hotel Transylvania. And the hotel was already impressive how we walk up to it. The queue line was quite empty because it was the end of the day already. It was nicely themed. And then we were quite excited to see the ride.
Yeah, so the Hotel Transylvania ride is the most iconic building in itself.
I would say the most grand building.
The most grand, yeah. It really shows you this Transylvanian castle. The ride itself maybe not didn't meet the expectation that much, but I think we can talk about that also a bit later. And from Hotel Transylvania, we continued through the Columbia Pictures Zone. There is a part which is themed like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. There is an indoor play area. There is a water ride, actually. We didn't do it because it was not that warm that evening, but there is this water ride which apparently makes you very wet. I do think that if we ever go back to this park, I would ride this one because I would love to see it. And then all the way at the end, there is a direct connection to the Smurfs Village area.
Yes, and the Smurfs Village is super cute. I think it's more aimed for kids. It has a couple of rides. One of them is Smurfs Studio Tour that we really wanted to do, but unfortunately the ride was closed.
Right in front of our nose, they closed it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even closure time of the park yet.
Yeah, but to give you a bit of an image how the Smurfs Village looks like, it's tiny, cute houses shaped as mushrooms. And the mushrooms, they have different roof colors. And in each house, there is a different purpose. So either there is a ride or F&B point or some other kid attraction. Yeah, retail. So it's really pretty. It's really charming. You feel like you're in the Smurfs Village.
Yeah, the main ride here is definitely the dark ride, but there's also a kiddie coaster. We actually decided to go back into the DreamWorks Hall. And while we were in the DreamWorks Hall, the park closed. And we decided to close the day by spending some more time in Riverland, which looks very much inspired by the US. And then you have the area in front of Legoland with the Legoland Hotel, which has a very specific style, of course. And then all the way in the back from the gate that we walked in, there is a French Village area. And maybe you can tell a bit more about that.
Yeah, it was interesting project because the French Village was, I would say, also mixed purpose land with space for F&B, for retail, for some extra attractions. It was all laid out around the lake. All the buildings had facades made of natural stone or looking like a natural stone.
Yeah, there was a water wheel. Some of the facades were overgrown with climbing plants, some fountains, yeah. some F&B. It was pretty atmospheric, I have to say.
Yes, and the way you could roam around was very organic. You could move from building to building, but sometimes also walk through some buildings. So it was like an area that you could explore. But also we were a bit surprised by the area because it had lots of empty, I would say, square meters inside of the buildings.
It started to feel at some point as if everything was closed and we didn't really understand. Maybe we were like, oh, maybe it's off season. And I was a bit confused by this. I was like, wait a second, is this area closed or is it open? And that's when we started to peek through the windows and we realized this area is not closed, it's undeveloped.
Yeah, so the facades from the outside were finished, but on the inside, the walls were only plastered. It looked like some stuff were stored there or that construction never finished. We started to get more curious and look more into the windows.
We saw some abandoned bakeries, abandoned pizza place, abandoned bar. Some of the spaces had some furniture in it, but was completely empty and dusty. But some of the areas had nothing in it, and it was still in the developer state, so there was only concrete. And this is when we realized that this area has just never really come to life since its inception. And that was interesting. All the way in the end, there is another entrance to the Riverland area with its own gates also. And there's the most lively zone because that's where McDonald's is. So it was quite busy. And then we finally found a place, a big building at the side of the water, which was called The Keg. And this is an Irish pub. And we decided to have a drink over there with a view over the entire Riverland area. Let's go to the base, the trail of the experience. Now it is behind us and now we know a little bit what we are taking from the experience.
We've left Motion Gate super fulfilled and it was nice experience. We've seen a lot, maybe more than we've expected. It was beautifully themed park with amazing upkeep and the IPs are just great. If anyone's a fan of DreamWorks or John Wick, you will definitely enjoy it over there.
And you can really feel the skill and ambition again with Dubai Parks and Resorts to be much bigger than I think its current success, which automatically makes me think, imagine that they would have spent the $60+ billion and they would have built twice the size of Disney World over here. What would have happened then? Also, the after park experience where we spent some time in Riverland, it left a bit of a weird aftertaste because it did cement for me the notion of the underperformance of the resort. We also waited to see the end show, which was a laser show on the water, but it was a bit tacky.
Big letdown, I would say. Yeah.
even though from the original opening of the resort, I know that the end show was always music and fireworks, much more in line with what Disney is doing. But I think they left that now. And now it's much more just like a laser show. And I also had the feeling that most of the people there were locals. So it didn't have this grand international appeal. It seemed like there were not so many tourists in the Dubai Parks and Resorts area. It was much more local people.
True. Families with kids.
Families with kids, yeah. Dubai Parks and Resort opened in 2016. Other than IMG, there were some investments and some changes in this resort. So what happened in the meantime is that John Wick open contract is relatively new. And Now You See Me High Roller is relatively new. And there is the brand new wooden coaster in Bollywood. And Bollywood closed. Mm-hmm. But okay, it's still new. And they were all built in a very short time span. You would normally say, yeah, because they're investing into the park, you know, and because they want to expand. No, it has another reason. Those coasters were meant for Six Flags.
Yes, so in 2016, Dubai Parks and Resorts also announced the addition of Six Flags Dubai. But in 2019, Dubai Parks and Resorts announced that Six Flags was cancelled. So I believe from what you're saying that they already ordered some rides and they had to place them somewhere. So they just added them to the existing zones.
Which means that Motion Gate was before that without those two coasters. And then I think it's the park is very small, actually, and it is much smaller than it looks from the surface, especially knowing that those coasters were supposed to go to another gate. You know, there's already Legoland, Bollywood Park, Motion Gate. I think they are better off focusing more on the existing parks that they have and trying to expand those and not open another gate, because it's not so much a full day of entertainment, I think, that you would have from it.
Talking about a new expansion or new park, I looked into some timeline and it also said that in 2022, they announced their partnership with Real Madrid and it was supposed to be the world's first football theme park in 2024. Can you tell us more about this one?
The relationship between the Emirates and Real Madrid is going back really far. And mainly because Real Madrid got a massive capital injection from the Emirates Airlines company, which means that the relationship is already there. And it seems like the interest of the Middle East into football is rapidly growing, especially European football is getting bigger and bigger. And from what I understood is that Dubai Parks and Resort is supposed to open a Real Madrid themed theme park. But from the early inception of the project, they were talking mainly about kind of like the Bollywood approach, where it was a lot of experiences and a lot of simulators and stuff like that. I really hope that it's not going to be that. I hope that it's going to be also a lot of physical attractions. But then again, having a theme park entirely based on one football club, it's something new. We haven't seen that before. So I'm really curious what they're going to do there. When we were there, it was promoted already. And I'm really curious if this Real Madrid has the appeal to draw in massive amounts of visitors. If those IPs from Hollywood are not doing what they're expected to do, I don't know if Real Madrid will do the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will be interesting to see how it develops.
And we go to the professional view on the experience. What do you see as an architect in such a massive project like this?
First of all, what we've discussed, it's a central hub model with one full indoor part, with four zones and also outdoor part, which makes the park actually all year round park. It's quite weatherproof in such a hot climate because there are outdoor exhibits, but the shows and rides are actually indoor. What we also estimated is that approximately you could spend in the park from 4 to 5 hours. And probably the best time to come is between November and March.
Yeah, there's a lot of outdoor in this park.
Yeah, but still the main things are on the inside. So they did quite a good job. It also has quite some shading and trees, water bodies. So I believe it can be bearable in the hot climate. What I've also noticed is that the park looks very clean. The upkeep of the park is great. Just a few rides were under the maintenance. But in comparison to IMG Worlds of Adventure that we had the pleasure to visit just before Motion Gate, the size of facilities, the pathways, the floor dividers, they were designed in a more accurate scale, I would say. It didn't feel that overscaled. Of course, the entrance or the gate area before the park seems very big, maybe a bit too big, but the rest, when you are roaming around, is quite pleasant. You don't feel tiny in all that. Another thing that I would like to highlight is the light design, especially in the DreamWorks area, but also in the outside part. In the DreamWorks area, the light is designed in such a way that you completely can forget that you're inside of the hall. The hall is completely dark, and then the showpieces or important elements, photo ops, are amazingly lit. So it draws your attention and creates extra nice atmosphere within the park. What we were also amazed about inside of the hall was the landscaping. So different levels inside of the hall. It wasn't all flat.
It's very clear that this park is developed and produced by very competent people and companies.
Mm-hmm.
The quality in general is extremely high. It's very international. And I think it has all the quality aspects to it that you would expect in an international theme park resort in the US.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely there to serve a global audience. Everything is in perfect English. All the voice acting is done very well. It is very clean how they laid it out, how it was set up with the wayfinding, with the signing, with the fences, with the green space. All the flooring is amazing. What you already mentioned is the integrated lighting is really good.
Mm-hmm. But also the facilities, the amount of them was sufficient. There were lots of beautiful themed F&B points and great F&B selection. What we also really enjoyed was the queue line design, and all the pre-show elements were just beautiful and really in the highest standard.
In some instances, it is even the best part of the ride. So the queue line is better than the ride itself.
So even though sometimes we had to wait in the queue line, it was still interesting and creating that amazing anticipation.
Yeah, I think the IPs are generally treated really well. You can see that the art direction, the creative direction over the IPs was very strict, very recognizable. There's nothing that you say and you think like, oh, that's a bit off or something. It was very strongly artistically connected to the actual movies themselves.
Also, what we find always challenging in the theme park design is how to integrate the installations and the elements that have to be in the building for the safety or for regulations. And in this park, they did such a great job. We could not see any ventilation shafts, or all the fans were just so nicely integrated and nicely designed that it didn't take you out of that experience.
When you realize that entire DreamWorks project is architecture and it all had to be built with steel structures, concrete slabs, with flooring, with walls, with what Alex already mentioned, with the ventilation, with evacuation, with fire safety, then it is just done so professionally.
I'm also curious if you'd like to add anything from a themed entertainment professional point of view.
Yeah, I think what I've seen here is some of the best rock art that I've ever seen. There is some amazing sculpted cement over here where especially in the indoor areas where some of the walls, and we are the type of people that touch everything, so
and knock on the
knock on everything. So the walls, the rocks, the trees, the fake foliage is amazing, especially in the DreamWorks area. The trees, the bushes, the grass, it looks really good. I do have to also say that this park is very grand on the surface. Like it is, like I said, it is really laid out to you as if you're going into a big Hollywood experience. But I think overall, it does feel much smaller after you have actually gone through the experience than it initially felt like when you walk in. Mainly because it is actually physically also not really a big park.
Mm-hmm.
You quite quickly are able to walk from one side to the other. And also the park borders are quite close to each other. And unfortunately, I think the highest praise go to all the static elements that are in this park, because the static stuff, so the theming, the texturing, the materials, the theme painting, this is all great.
Statues and also photo ops.
Yeah, this kind of stuff, the photo ops, the park elements, queue lines are amazing. I think this is a very good example of a park where the queue lines are really well done. I do think that this park lacks a bit on the front of show production and animated figures and special effects. There's no defining animatronic or something that blows you away, as in a character that is really come to life. Or I think most of the stuff that we have seen was in the Shrek Dark Ride, mm-hmm. and of course they made a very conscious decision there to keep the puppets very basic in their movements, which works for Shrek. In many of the other areas in the park, there's actually no figures at all. Like, for example, in the Lionsgate area, there's no animated figures. It's only projection or statues.
Which is quite surprising for the park that has that many dark rides. Because I would say half of the rides maybe are dark rides.
I think that's maybe what lets the park a bit down. And also even the How to Train Your Dragon one has quite static figures. Mm-hmm. For the dragons and for the characters. One really good example, I think, for me, that kind of embodies what this park is all about is the Hotel Transylvania ride, which is, I think, from an architectural point of view, one of the most impressive show buildings. A Transylvanian castle with a big bridge towards it, with a river in front of it, with a lot of greenery, really nicely lit. And then the queue line is amazing, with a lot of fabrics and really well integrated lighting and beautiful materials on the walls. And then the ride itself is just a kind of a letdown. The scenography is done well, but all the figures are static. And there was no real storyline. It felt very chaotic. And I think that happens quite a lot in this park. And I have to say, this park has a very film set approach to many of the buildings, like the main street, but also the Now You See Me street. Those are film sets.
Yeah, sometimes there are no buildings behind, yeah, or even no facilities or storage. It's just film sets, facades, and that's it.
And then we go to the part which is called Room for Improvement. So this is the part where we think that there are some points that they can act upon to improve the experience. There is, I think, a lot to say about this, Alex, because we both were continuously throughout the day discussing what we would do differently. And I think you also have a view on that.
Yeah, for sure. First thing that is quite noticeable are slow operations. I would say the operations could be smoother and quicker, especially in the major dark rides, because for How to Train Your Dragon, we had to wait quite some time to get in on the ride.
I have the feeling that this is a recurring theme in the Middle East.
That's true. We repeat ourselves.
The operations are just, they are not on the level that it should be. And we
maybe it's not what we're used to. That it's not like a machine working. Yeah, it's much more personal and everyone takes their time.
Yeah, it seems like they were a bit too relaxed in the rides, even though, you know, the main goal for operations is normally to just get everything running as smooth as possible. But besides that, I also have the feeling that because this park is so heavily depending on IPs, I'm questioning if that's a smart decision for the long term. I wanted to do a little test with you even. There is one major attraction that we didn't mention. And do you know which one that is? I did it on purpose.
All right. Let me think. What could it be?
It was there in the park. We passed it. We talked about it, but we didn't mention it.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, it was in the Columbia Pictures Zone.
Uh-huh.
It was the Green Hornet coaster.
Okay, I actually forgot about this one.
Exactly. So this is what I mean with those IPs. The Green Hornet was a superhero movie from Columbia, from Sony Pictures. And there is a whole coaster there. And we didn't feel drawn to it. The IP doesn't really mean that much. And if the IP is slowly dying, then you have that thing standing, and you have to decide as a park operator, what are we going to do with it? Do we keep the IP? Do we retheme it? And like we mentioned before, the strongest aspect of this park is the theming. So it is very risky to put all your eggs in those baskets.
If IPs will change or fade out a bit, then what are they going to do? It's so much money that goes into the zone, and it's a pity to just remove it because it's not as popular.
For example, John Wick is a very relevant IP right now, and I think it is pretty well known right now. And to be honest, that's an IP that they can totally capitalize on.
And I would say this one was surprising to me because it's not really a kids movie. It's more aimed for adults. And it was quite a nice surprise. Although, again, it's quite a brave move because it's just a movie. And, you know, at some point it might change. And it's not even what kids recognize.
The John Wick universe with the Continental Hotel could live on past the movie because you could still continue on this idea of the Continental Hotel. Take this this phenomenon of the Continental Hotel and continue that, because John Wick is maybe one character that is connected to this hotel, but you can have many, many different stories about who comes there and who talks to each other and who is involved in those assassins' contracts.
Talking about John Wick, I know that you've mentioned before another room for improvement with that, right? Because the queue line is so heavily themed and it's so beautiful, you take your time to go to the ride, but then you can see the ride. And how was your first impression of the ride, actually, of the coaster?
Yeah, maybe that's an interesting point to mention, is that John Wick is for me a very good example where the front facade, the queue line, the entrance actually with the hotel lobby, often something that is a bit forgotten in theme parks is ceilings. Well, not here. The ceilings were amazing in the John Wick queue line. And then the queue line itself, with all the different spaces, with all the props, with all the knives and the guns and all that stuff behind the glass, it's really nice. And then all the way in the end, you get to the ride and all of a sudden there's nothing. It's completely empty.
It's just bare coaster, but also with no decoration around
nothing,
it.
Nothing,
just standing
music
on the field.
As if those two things were, and probably it is like that, those two things were completely developed separately. And that's a pity, because when you get off the ride, after you did the experience, you go back into the hotel again, and you go through the lobby outside again. And that's amazing again. So it just feels like those things are just not interconnected well, and that the ride itself deserves the same love and attention that the entrance and the queue line got. So my room for improvement bit would be to the operators of the park, please find this park again. See the value of this park, you know. You are almost there. It's just that it just lacks a bit on certain aspects. The dark rides need more life. There needs to be more interaction with characters or with animated figures. I just wanted to mention one thing. So you have to imagine DXB Entertainment is the owner of Dubai Parks and Resorts. This is what it says on their LinkedIn. DXB Entertainment owns and operates the Dubai Parks and Resorts destination, which consists of 4 theme parks. And then it says Six Flags Dubai opening in 2019, and one water park, all at the same location. The large-scale 13.2 billion AED development with 6.7 million ticketed visits expected in 2017. At time of recording, we are well past 2017. So that means that they are not even updating their LinkedIn. It seems like, I don't know what is happening over there, but it seems like they're not totally on top of it. Please find that spark again, operate this thing well, connect it better to the city. And to be honest, they have something really valuable in hand, because this park is not bad. It's not a bad park.
Actually, it was a very big surprise to us.
Yeah, and I think also the cancellation of Six Flags, and in all honesty, I think it's good that it didn't happen, because this park needs more attention. You should expand this park, not another one, you know. And also the Bollywood park, maybe just you don't need that one, you know. Focus on Motion Gate, focus on Legoland. Those two are doing quite okay. And to be honest, Motion Gate can use a lot more to make it a full day experience. So let's get to the grumpy minutes. where we can, just for a short period of time, we can let out any grievances, any negatives, any annoyances that we encountered during this day.
I don't have many, but one major one is that few rides were under maintenance, and this was such a pity because I'm not sure if we'll go back to the park, and I feel like we haven't seen all of it, and it was quite some major rides. So we were warned when we were just about to enter the park that this is the case. However, especially in the DreamWorks area, 2 out of 4 rides were not operating. Yeah.
And they're big rides.
Yeah, and I think they would be amazing to see. So I understand that they have to work on them, but it was just a pity.
To continue on that point, when we were on the John Wick coaster, there were a couple of girls in the vehicle right next to us or opposite to us. And by the way, the operations of this coaster was so slow again. We were sitting there long enough to have a conversation with other people on the train.
It was good to interview them.
Yes. And then we were talking to those girls and we asked them a bit like, do you guys come often? And they said, yes, we have an annual pass. We come here all the time. And we said, what is your favorite ride in the park? And they both said wholeheartedly, Madagascar coaster is amazing. It's probably the best coaster in this park. And we were both like, oh, shit, it's closed.
Yeah, it's what a pity. We cannot try it.
And besides that, of course, also the Smurfs ride closed. So we did miss 3 of the major rides in this park, and it's a pity. I really hope that we will be in a situation that we can ride it still. One thing that I really didn't enjoy was the way that they treated park closure. Many of the F&B points closed before the park closure time, and they were already cleaning, which is absolutely not done in many other theme parks. It's not a good look for your visitors. The other thing is that it really felt like as soon as the closing time was there, they started to force people out of the park. On the minute when it was closing time, they put employees in places to stop people from walking in. And it felt a bit, for me, it's not really a friendly way of treating your guests.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like, oh, bye guys, see you soon again. But it was more like, just get out this
get
way.
Yeah, get out that way, please. Another grumpy minute that I have. It really hurts me to see that there is a certain design intent and that there is a lot of this stuff that is completely not the design intent, that is just interfering with what it was originally supposed to be. Like, for example, the Riverland with all those big buildings and beautiful facades and shop windows and F&B points, it's all laid out so professional and it feels like a little village, like a little Disney Springs kind of experience with water, with terraces, with F&B points, with, it felt like Riverland under new management, as if someone else took over and they would just threw in their own stuff, you know, completely random.
New project that is not really operating, but it's more overruled already by some new idea instead of trying the initial idea.
Yeah, that hurt me a bit.
Yeah, the area is very nice, so it would be nice to see it running.
So let's go to the highlights, stuff that was absolutely memorable for us. To start off, I think my highlight from an experience point of view is the Shrek Dark Ride.
The same. I would say exactly the same.
It is just really adorable. It's cute. It is recognizable.
But it had very unique style. I haven't seen any dark ride like this before. And in general, I would say the Shrek zone was the most impressive. Yeah. I'm not sure which zone was for you.
Yeah, I have actually 2 that I really, really think are my highlights. The Columbia Pictures outdoor area is the best outdoor area, I think, in the park, but with maybe the least impressive experiences overall. But this zone looked really nice. And I think if this zone would have some really good rides and it would come to life a bit more, then this is beautiful. It was very green. It had water. It had a bit more like an organic layout. But then again, you know, it was the least desirable zone to be in, I would say now, because there's not enough to experience over there. But I do agree with you. The DreamWorks area and especially the Shrek area, it's so incredibly well done. I really liked it.
Yeah, it might be so far my favorite indoor park. But also, I think the park is doing a great job because the upkeep is.
Yes.
It's great. We didn't really have any place where we could complain about how it's maintained. It's really all looking brand new.
I think that's definitely a point that we have to compliment them on, that the theming is both looking great, but it's also maintained great. You think that it's a given, but it's really not. We have seen many theme parks where the theming has been really suffering from the elements. And
I mean, you don't have to look far. Earlier on, when we visited IMG, there were writings on the wall and some things were just losing its color.
It's paint, yeah.
And here it all looks like it's new.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily see that it opened in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
A highlight that I think I also have to mention is the entrance and queue line of John Wick. And mm-hmm. That's some of the best interior decoration that I've seen. This excitement that you get from the John Wick soundtrack, together with this feeling that you're entering the Continental Hotel from ceiling to floor, entirely themed.
For my highlights, also the ride in itself, I know it wasn't really themed, but the coaster, because it was a new coaster for both of us, I also enjoyed it because it was some completely new type to try.
It was much more intense than it initially looks.
Talking to the girls, actually this is how it started, because I start to a bit think maybe it's too intense to do it. But then they said, no, we do it so many times.
And
it's
I even
so
tried
nice.
To calm you down. I said, oh no, it's not gonna rotate that much.
Yeah, and then it was just spinning all the time.
Just spinning all the time.
So it's much more surprising and intense than you can actually expect from it. So it was a highlight because it's something new to try.
Yeah. Let's go to the rating. So this is the part where we are going to rate the experience. And this one is a very interesting one, I have to say, because it's not so cookie cutter for me. We really had to dive into our rating form, the theme park review form. For me, it is so difficult to rate because on the surface, you really feel all the time that this is a very high level, high quality theme park. But then when we dive into the experience a bit deeper, it wasn't even close, I think, to the best theme parks we have seen.
Mm-hmm. So what would be your score?
Especially when I rate it based on the theme park space. So in terms of layout, master planning, park elements, routing, guest journey, the attraction marquees, entrances, queue lines, the wayfinding, the general sound design, music, all that stuff, really good. And we also always talk about level of customization. This park has a very high level of customization.
Yeah, it was fully customized.
Yeah, it's a pretty complete theme park. So my end score is an 8 dead on. And an 8 means great.
I think I went a bit higher than that because I'm just checking my theme park review form and the end score is 8.7. So it's a bit above that. And I think it has to do with the fact that I've rated the dark rides quite high, even though they were lacking some of the animatronics, let's say. But I think the Shrek ride made the score higher. And also the attractions and experiences in general, I've rated for 9.
And I think that's actually a really good score.
Yeah.
Especially if you compare it to to the IMG, where we were, I think, 6 and
yeah,
a little
six
under 6.
Something.
This leaves us to get to the point, trip off, consider, or trip on?
For me, it will be definitely trip on, and with no doubts, and I'm super curious about your choice.
I can also say I would give it a trip on.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, no, it is not one of the best theme parks that I've ever done, this park has aspects to it that are some of the best that I've ever seen. This park has a very good DreamWorks area, and I think that's very much worth it to see. If you are into DreamWorks, and if you like Shrek, if you like How to Train Your Dragon or Kung Fu Panda, this is great to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the DreamWorks area makes it much more desirable.
So what's next? On the level of theme parks, we still have in the planning to visit also Warner Bros. Warner Bros. World in Abu Dhabi, which is interesting because Warner Bros. World is entirely indoor. And that's a good chance for us to compare it to DreamWorks also, and to IMG, obviously. But besides that, we also have in the planning another park, which is kind of a leftover from Dubai Land.
Yes, so before we go to Abu Dhabi, we would like to explore the rest of the attractions in Dubai. Global Village is our next destination.
And this leaves us to say, as always,
our tip, go on and plan your next trip.